So please welcome our first speaker, Ben, from Fullerton, California.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Ben. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Ben.
And glad to be in Arizona, although it's still too hot for me. just real quick, my mom had me when she was 16 years old. She was either a moderate drinker or a heavy drinker, as our book describes. When she had me, she found that a sufficient enough reason to stop for a while, and now she moderates. She has a drink on occasion. It's not that big of a deal for her. She can take it or leave it, except for she really enjoys having a glass of wine when I'm at the house, for whatever reason. We'll be sitting at dinner, and she'll go, "I'm going to have a glass of wine." Like too bad, you know, and drink up, you know. But I always was a really uncomfortable kid. I just childish emotions, and I hated my name. I thought Ben was a wussy's name. I always wanted to be named Mike. You know, so we play cops and robbers or cowboys and Indians. You know, just call me Mike. Just call me Mike. And they call me Mike for a little while, and they'd screw it up, and I'd get pissed off. And when I was 7, 8 years old, my parents had another son, and they named him Mike. And I always hated that little bastard. And you know, and I'm resentful and spiteful, and you don't want to get in my way, or else I will make you uncomfortable, and or at least do my best to try. And when I was 10 years old, my stepfather had a job opportunity to move down to California. I was originally from Tacoma, Washington. And I remember sitting at the dinner table, and my stepdad says, "You know, how'd you like to move down to California?" And I'm a dreamy kid. I got a lot of things going on in my head, and I'm thinking I'm going to be a movie star. I'm going to be filthy rich by the time I'm 20. And, you know, I want to go now. Let's go. And it was not what I expected. We moved to Huntington Beach, the apparent self-proclaimed surf capital of the world. And I was from Tacoma, Washington. It was the early 90s. It was the grunge scene up there. My mom was hip, so I'm wearing, you know, ripped up jeans and flannels, and that was not cool in Huntington Beach. It was actually white trash, and you know, and it just made me even more uncomfortable, and started getting into fights. And not that I'm any sort of tough guy, you know, as you can see, you know, I would get uncomfortable. You'd threaten something, and I'd punch you in the face and run away. And sometimes I'd get away, sometimes I wouldn't, and you know, and I started drinking when I was 13 years old. All my friends had started drinking by this point, and I had always told myself that I didn't want to be like my dad. I didn't want to be like my grandfather, and you know, and I knew that alcohol was the reason why they were the way they were. And the night I was at my friend's house, that first drink, all of that kind of went out the window. I forgot about it. There was excitement in the air, and you know, and I just remember. Wanted to be a part of whatever, and we're waiting for these 40s and Mickeys, and at about 10:50, they showed up. I had to be home at 11, and I drank this 40 real fast, and I immediately just had this comfort, this feeling that everything was going to be okay, and you know, and I knew that alcohol was going to be a big part of my life, and I went home, and I didn't get into trouble, and you know, Dare was wrong, and you know, and I started drinking as often as I possibly could. I, you know, was drinking. I went into regular high school and or into my freshman year of high school. I say regular high school because I was only there for a very brief period of time. And you know, just drinking as much as I could. My first semester, I got I was basically told that I should leave and go to a different, you know, school where I could get my credits faster. And you know, and I went into that school, and it was independent studies, and you go to school for about a half hour a week, you get your little packet, you go home, do your little packet, and drink and smoke weed all day, or at least that's what I did, and you know, and I had it made, you know. If I could do that and make over $100,000 a year, you'd probably have somebody else here right now, but I can't. you know, I got my grades back up, and I always stayed away from other stuff, and finally what happened was I decided I wanted to go back into regular high school. I went back to Westminster High School, and that summer before I went back, I was at a friend's house. I never tried any hallucinogens or anything like that. I was just a good kid, you know, drinking and smoking weed every day. And, you know, I was at my friend's house. He had this acid. I took one hit of acid. I didn't think it was working. I took 30-some-odd shots of various different types of booze and went back to my house. Normally what I would do is walk into the house, good night, Mom, go right to bed. And for whatever reason that night, I just wanted to chat. And, hey, Mom, how's it going? It's good to see you. How was your 4th of July? And she goes, come here. And she goes, blow in my face, you know, and she's standing like right here. And I go... And she takes me over to my friend's house, is yelling at all my friends, and that was basically the beginning of the end. My first sponsor told me that we drink for as long as we can, and we drink for about 8 months after that. And I was just, after this, it was just problem after problem after problem, and I went back into high school, and I was drinking so often that I wasn't going. I would get to school, and I'd have to leave. I feel like everybody's staring at me. I feel like my skin is crawling, and I would just have to leave and drink. And I started getting arrested. I started going in and out of youth shelters. My mom, after one of my times in this youth shelter, I went back to school, and I had every intention of not drinking again. I'm going to get it together. I'm going to join a sport. I'm going to get good grades. I'm going to get everybody on my good side. You know, it's going to be just like it was. And, you know, and that morning, that first day back, I was, went to PE zero period class, and then I got out, and, you know, and I'm on fire. I'm doing this. I'm doing this. And, my friend Jeff comes up to me, and he goes, hey, you want to get out of here? I go, no, I'm not drinking anymore. And he goes, oh, man, Tim just got a bottle of Jack Daniels and a new bong. Well, I'll start tomorrow, you know, tomorrow I can do it. And I just can't do it today. And for the next few months, that was my cry. I can't do it today, but I can do it next week or tomorrow or some after the holidays. I can do it after the holidays. And, you know, and that never came. And finally I got into... arguing with my mom, and something just kind of broke inside me, and I said, I can't stop drinking. And she put me into this outpatient place. I'm in this outpatient place for about 2 weeks, and after 2 weeks, they said my drug alcohol level was higher than when I'd come in, and asked me to either leave or stop. And I knew I wasn't going to be able to stop, so I left. I stole some money from my parents. I ran away from home. I'm living in my friend's shed for a couple weeks, drinking a fifth of Jack Daniels every day, and you know, every night I'm thinking, what happened to me? What happened to me? You know, I had all these dreams. I had, you know, I had all this, you know, potential, and you know, and whatever that is, and you know, and I couldn't understand what happened. And after a couple weeks, I got arrested walking out of a Hollywood Video with a video stuffed under my jacket. I don't know why I wanted the video. I wasn't even really there. I kind of came to as the buzzers were going off, and I just kind of kept, you know, stumbling outside. And they pulled me back in. Police came to arrest me and took me to the Westminster Police Department. And you know, and this cop's telling me, you know, you're not. I was telling this to Kia. I was going to screw up your name, but I'm just going to shorten it. Yeah. All right. And I'm, you know, he told me, you're not going to be any big time convict. You're not going to be, you're not going to go anywhere. You're not going to go off to school. You're going to be that guy that I know on a first name basis. I'm going to be coming and visiting you on a regular basis. And, you know, and I've always wanted, in Alcoholics Anonymous, and when I first came in, I always thought, God, why can't I be like one of these guys? You know, and that's my story. I'm just some friggin' loser. You know, I'm never going to amount to anything. I'm going to be in the garage for the rest of my life. Teeth are going to be falling out. You know, I'm going to have some wife that I physically abuse on a regular basis. That's what's my destiny. If I go back out there, that's what I have waiting for me. You know, and, you know, I know that to be the truth. After I got arrested, my mom came to pick me up, and you know, she's crying, and she says, you know, what's going on with you, Ben? You know, what's going on? I can't sleep at night. I haven't slept in weeks. Every time I hear the phone ring, I think the cops got you. Every time I hear sirens, I think I'm going to have to come identify your body. And, you know, and I never wanted to make my mom feel like that. And, you know, as a kid, I'm telling her, I'm going to buy you a house on the beach. I'm going to do all these wonderful things for you. And, you know, and I can't help but tear her heart out on a daily basis. And, you know, and what do I do in that type of situation? I laugh at her. I laugh in your face because I don't know how to deal with real emotion. And, social services stepped in and said that I was going to have to go to an inpatient place. I went into this inpatient treatment center on January 12th of 2001. That's my sobriety date. And they started taking me to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and started telling me to get a sponsor. And I had some reluctance. And I thought that, you know, in that treatment center, I kept thinking, you know, I'm going to be in here for a little while. I'm going to get everybody back on my side. I'm going to go back out there and I'm going to go back to my parents' house. And it's just going to be like it was. You know, it's only a matter of time before I drink again because I always drink again. And, you know, and I just try and get out of here as fast as I possibly can. And, they started telling me to get a sponsor. I started asking around. A couple guys said, you know, I got too many. I just got my kids back. I don't have enough time for you. And, you know, and I kind of gave up for a little while. And then I was talking to this lady, Patty, and Patty said, why don't you ask this guy right here? And, I walk outside and this guy is 6 inches shorter than me. And he's standing 2 steps below me, but for whatever reason, he felt bigger than me that night. It could be because he was like this wide, but, I asked him to be my sponsor and he said, he didn't give me one of those lines. Why don't you meet me here? Why don't you do this and get back to me? He said, are you willing to go to any length for victory over alcohol? And I was tired of the way that I was feeling and I said, I'll do whatever you want me to do. And he started taking me to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and started taking me through the book and having me identify with the things in there. And, you know, and I went through all the steps sorry, I totally went off on a tangent. I got like 4 minutes left in, but, growing up in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, because of getting sober so young, I always thought maybe it was a phase for my first year and a half. I thought maybe it was a phase, maybe it was this, maybe it was that. And I was sitting in my Wednesday night meeting one time and this older gentleman sitting next to me and he goes, aren't you a little too young to be here? And I go, you don't know me, you son of a bitch. I didn't really say that. I probably said something really witty like, no, you know, but I went home and I grabbed the book and I'm going to find something to throw in his face. And you know, and I'm going through the book and I get to chapter 3 and it starts talking about young people and it says there are those of us who only drank for a few years that were in the same position as those of us who drank for 20 years. And I thought, holy crap, that's me. You know, and I'm underlining and I'm going to throw this one in his face, you know, and right after that it says, this is particularly true of the woman alcoholic. And, I've accepted it and, some of my gay friends try and embrace it, but after that, there was no more debate. There was nothing in the back of my head saying maybe this was a phase, maybe this or that or whatever. I knew that I was just as alcoholic as any one of the people in these rooms. And, you know, and I've been sitting in the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous for a year and a half, and relating to the things that they were talking about. Maybe not the exact situations, but the feelings and the things that they went through. You know, they were just maybe a little bit different. And, you know, I kept taking those steps and I got to the eighth and the ninth step. And I love talking about the eighth and the ninth step. When I was about 9 months sober, I made a couple amends and I was amazed before I was halfway through and didn't make any more amends for another couple years. And when I had about 2.5 years sober, I'm going through some financial problems, I'm going through relationship problems, and I just don't know how to deal with life on life's terms. And I'm starting to get this discontent in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm looking at the literature rack and I think, you know, I pick up the pamphlet on sponsorship, you know, he's not doing this, maybe that's what's wrong. And you know, and I'm just trying to find something outside myself to make me feel better on the inside again. And, you know, and I was at this retreat and this guy, Keon, goes, I'm complaining to this guy. And Keon was the type of guy, I'm sure you guys know somebody like this. He was the type of guy where, you love to hear him share, but, you don't actually talk to him because, he's going to ask you about what you're doing. And, he cornered me that weekend and told me that I needed to, that if I started making financial amends, my financial life would get better. Once I started making relationship amends, my relationships would get better. You know, and I want to feel better right now. So I went out and I made 30 amends that week. And, you know, and I'm on fire for it. I'm writing all these lists. I got the grocery stores, liquor stores, 7-Elevens, and running around Westminster Boulevard. And I go into the last, I'm working the 7-Elevens one day. I go into the last one and, you know, it was easy. You know, everyone took the money. It was like, wow, thanks. That's really great. And, you know, so I got my pitch down. I got $10 in my hand. I'd stolen two packs of cigarettes from this place. It was going to be a cakewalk. You know, and I walk in and, you know, 2.5 years ago, I stole two packs of cigarettes. And in order for me to stay sober, I need to make every wrong I made right. And he goes, oh, you want two packs of cigarettes? And I go, no, I stole two packs of cigarettes and I need to pay you back. And he goes, what? You stole from my store? You get out of here. I was like, oh, you want your money? You know, and I'm a little freaked out and, I look behind me and this guy had just walked in and he goes, don't worry about it. You did your part. I was like, holy crap, you bastards are everywhere. You know? And, you know, and I left there and I had this sense of freedom. I had this feeling that everything was going to be okay. That feeling that alcohol had given me for that first time I drank it. And, you know, and I seek that everywhere I go. And, that's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Ben. Please welcome our second speaker, and that will be Brendan from Phoenix, Arizona.
Hi, I'm an alcoholic. My name is Brendan. Thanks, Ben. Great message. That's funny. I was just thinking back of growing up in young people in AA, and I was on a host committee in January 12, 2001, when you were getting sober, and I was staying in Westminster, California, couch surfing on somebody's couch on the Laggy Paw committee, and outreaching for Icky Paw in Detroit that year, and I was the outreach chair for that committee, and spent about 2 weeks on that couch. But it's just kind of cool, like, you know, I love hearing, you know, people's stories and the different people that help them out through it. And, you know, my story is not much different than Ben's story. When I think about it, it's, I got introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous through Alateen around the age of 11. My mom went to our parish priest and said, you know, my husband's got a drinking problem. We need to do something about this. And he directed her to the Al-Anon meeting on Friday nights at the parish we grew up in. And, you know, I grew up in a pretty big, Irish Catholic family. I have like 36 first cousins on one side of my family. And, you know, when we were around alcohol, you know, we celebrated all the time. We found reasons to, you know, celebrate with alcohol all the time. You know, if it was First Communion, confession, if it was graduation or whatever it may be, we're going to celebrate that for whoever was having it. You know, and I grew up actually liking my aunts and uncles that drank more, and I liked hanging out with them. I was more attracted to them, and I thought the other ones that didn't drink were a bunch of squares. I didn't want to hang out with them. They weren't fun. They used to tell me what I wasn't doing right or what I'm not doing this good enough. And the aunts and uncles that were drinking, they were just like, you know, I felt that unconditional love, and I liked the way they were when they drank. And so, you know, it wasn't too long after, you know, I know I had alcohol between probably the age of 4 and 11 before I went to my first Alateen meeting at 11 years old, but I really didn't start drinking on my own or drinking for the effect of alcohol until probably around the age of 12 years old. But I took right off. I got admitted to my first youth treatment center in 1987. I was 13 years old, and back then it was, you know, they were like 30-day programs, and they brought in AA meetings to that place, that facility. It was a hospital in the Detroit metro area, and they brought in people, you know, AA meetings, and there was probably like 150 people going to that meeting on a Friday night, and I got to learn a lot about Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, but at that time, there's no, in my gut, you know, how I felt about, in my heart too, is that there's no way I'm an alcoholic. There's no way, I just got caught, you know, and my circumstances are different. I'm not like these people. I point to all the things that were good in my life to see, show myself, or at least try to convince myself or lie to myself that I was different. And I spent, from the age of 13 to 22 in and out of trouble and in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous. I had a great, and my mom, she achieved a black belt in Al-Anon in a short period of time, and every time that I got in trouble, she, to get in the good graces of my family, to get, back in the household, I would have to go to open AA meeting on a Sunday night at 8:30. And I remember going to this meeting, it was the Dearborn Heights meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous in Dearborn, Michigan, and I listened to the speaker for 45 minutes and say, this is great for you, but I don't have a problem with alcohol. I'm just doing this so I can get back in the house and not be on the streets, or have to sleep over a buddy's house or something like that. I'll quit drinking for a short period of time, and I'm going to go back to the way it was. I continued to get in more trouble. I got into college. I had a golf scholarship to college. I proceeded to lose that pretty quickly on three separate occasions. Get it, lost it, get it back, lost it, get it back, lost it, and that went on. I was good at, allowing people, or at least I was good at, convincing people that, I deserved a second chance, or, I messed up, but I was, I deserved another chance. And eventually, for me in my life, the chances ran out. And what happened was, I got on a DUI when I was 21 years old, and I'd also gotten arrested at 16 for throwing a hotel party and doing $2,000 worth of damage to the hotel room and a blackout and with a bunch of my friends, and had to do community service for that. But I mean, like, those different instances, I got out of the trouble after I did the community service or paid the fines. I was always, and what happened is my family had said that, if you get another drunk driving, we're not going to pick you up or bail you out from jail. So I got my second DUI at the age of 22, about 20 days after my 22nd birthday. That was June 17th, 1995, and that's Father's Day. I was supposed to play golf with my dad that Father's Day, and he liked to play golf with me and spend time with me, and I thought that I could go to an afternoon party at my buddy's house on campus and have some steaks with them, drink some root beers, and control my drinking. I told myself this lie as I'm going to this party on a Saturday night, thinking I can make it back to Dearborn to play golf with my dad the next morning. This can happen, And for me, what happened was what happened every time I picked up that drink. The first drink entered my body, the phenomenon of craving kicked in, and before I knew it, I was off and running. I was doing keg stands at the end of that night, and I was driving home drunk again, and I'm thinking that, I could pull it off. And the only thing is, I was home safe. I remember this vividly. I walked up the stairs of my parents' house, and I got the key out, opened the door, and I remembered I forgot my golf clubs at my boss's house. I had a part-time job, and I left my golf clubs there, and I was like, crap. And my dad's not gonna wanna drive to the east side of Detroit to go pick him up or whatever, and I was like, well, I'll go out and get them. I got it home safely. I can go get those golf clubs and make it home okay. And I went to, there's two routes you can do in the city I live in. You can go by the police station to get the east side of the town, or you can go the opposite way and like on this other street and like avoid the police station. And of course, I don't know what, I was drunk. I mean, I went in right in front of the police station. Of course, my turn signal wasn't working. He pulled me over for that, and I got a DUI again. So I remember, that officer, and it just happened to be around that same time my cousin was just getting done with law school, and he was working for the city as an assistant prosecutor. And my cousin said, there's no way you're going to get out of this one. He goes, this police officer lost his wife and his kid to a drunk driver, and he's going to show up to every single one of your court dates. He's going to make sure the judge gives you the type of sentence you deserve. And And, you know, I was scared for a little bit. You know, you could scare an alcoholic a little bit, but, you know, usually that fades away pretty quickly. And you know, I got sentenced. I didn't have to go to jail, thank God. But I did have to do some intensive AA meetings. I had to go to 5 meetings a week. I had to go to this intensive outpatient class that I had to pay for. And I remember starting that class and thinking, you know, they bring in these speakers, and a lot of these guys are like a lot older and whatnot, and I related to them, but I was at some point I just really didn't relate to them too. And I remember entering these AA, you know, going to AA meetings and, you know, showing up there right on time and leaving just before like the Lord's Prayer and getting my court sheet signed at the beginning of the meeting if I could, you know, if someone was willing enough to do that, or just signing it myself, you know. I didn't have any shame in signing in myself. I've seen other people do it. I heard about that, so I did it. And I went to about 6 months. I stayed dry. I didn't have a sponsor. I didn't have a home group. I didn't have any AA commitments. I saw other young people in my home group staying sober and outside appearances looked like somewhat happy. But you know, I still didn't want. I didn't want sobriety. I think deep in my heart, I felt that I could, if I just fulfilled this, you know, whatever, 6 months of AA classes, outpatient I have to go to, and if I just finished the 2 years of probation and then the 2 years of AA meetings 5 times a week, that eventually I'll be able to, you know, drink, go back to the way of drinking like that I like to drink. And, you know, something happened to me over that 6 month period of going to a lot of AA meetings. What happened was, is, that I got, you know, I started to relate for the first time in my whole life. I started to relate to the people that were sharing at meetings. I started to get a little bit honest in my life. I was working a job at the time. I was billing this company for 70 hours a week and only working 10 hours a week. And so I said, you know, all these people talking about honesty in the AA meetings. So I'm going to quit this job. I'm just going to get a manual labor job in the warehouse. And, you know, I started doing some changing in my life. To get honest and so I wouldn't feel this guilt and the shame about who I was and what I was doing. And I still didn't, you know, I still didn't think that getting a sponsor or getting home group would be that big of a difference, or I really needed to do that, or, you know, so I didn't. And, what happened was, after I changed my job, I went to go work for this, at this warehouse, and this guy who trained me on his position, he was leaving the company. So I went to his going away party. I thought it was the right thing to do. I thought, you know, yeah, of course it's at Brady's Tavern, and I thought on Southfield and 13 Mile in Detroit, I thought, yeah, I could go, you know, to his going away party, and then I can hit that 8 o'clock AA meeting. And, you know, the thing is, you know, with an alcoholic like myself, you know, I started drinking Diet Cokes, and before I knew it, they turned into Bud Light. Someone handed me one at some course during the night, and I was drinking. I remember driving home that night drunk after I had already missed that 8 o'clock AA meeting and thinking, man, I blew it again. I blew it again. And I didn't know how I got to this point. And so I continued to go to AA meetings for about 20 days. And I didn't tell anybody that I picked up a drink. I just went to AA meetings. Still didn't have a sponsor. And I showed up for an AA meeting one day, and this old timer pulled me aside and asked me to give this this guy a ride to an AA meeting. And this is where the miracle happens for me. It's that I don't know what happened. And the car ride over to this AA meeting, I picked this guy up at his house. He was much worse than me. He was 25 years old, had 3 DUIs. I was only 22 and had 2. You know, he was much worse than me. And I thought that, you know, I just blurted it out, man. I picked up a drink 20 days ago, and I'm afraid I'm going to pick up a drink, and I don't have a sponsor, I don't have a home group. And he goes, that's all right, you can get one tonight. And he may have had, like, I don't think he had 60 days at this point, but He did point me in the right direction. I got a sponsor that night, and that sponsor got me right into service work, you know. And I relate a lot to Ben's story about, like, getting into the book right away with this guy. Once I had a sponsor, he goes, all right, I need you to meet me tomorrow night at 6:30 at the meeting. I said, doesn't that meeting start at 8:30? He's like, yeah, exactly. We're going to meet at 6:30, though. So we met at 6:30, and we take 15 minutes to, you know, set up that meeting, and then we showed up to basically go through the big book one page at a time, right from the beginning of the cover to all the way through it. And And then when he told me to write, I wrote. And when he told me to get down, you know, and do the third step prayer, we did the third step prayer together. We went up to the chapel in the church and got on our knees and did the third step prayer. I mean, that's how I got introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I'm fortunately, you know, growing up in young people's, I got to get involved in some AA events and some service commitments. But really, when I think about WIPA, it got me involved in some areas of service that, mainstream AA. It got me to be an intergroup rep in my home group. It got me to be eventually a GSR at my home group. It got me, you know, to take on coffee commitments, eventually chair, you know, young people's committees for conventions and stuff like that. You know, I moved out to Arizona about almost 6 years ago, I guess it's been. You know, when I moved out here, my sponsor told me, you know, back in Detroit, he said, you know, you're going to need a new sponsor, and you're also going to need to go to 30 meetings in 30 days and raise your hand at all those meetings and tell them you're new to the area. And that you're looking for some good meetings. And when I did, I took that action. My sponsor and a whole bunch of other, you know, people came in up around me, and I have a host of friends today out here in Arizona, and I'm grateful for all of them. And you know, I know I'm winding down here on time. We got shut up here, but I just, you know, I know for me that you know, coming out here and getting involved in young people's got me involved in the ASCEPA. And I was on the host committee for ASCEPA in the 2007 when it was in Mesa. I had to be the hotel chair, and I had never done that service commitment before till that point. And it gave me an opportunity to get to know a lot of the young people in the area and get involved in Alcoholics Anonymous out here. So I'm grateful for, you know, this convention. I'm glad it's here in Casa Grande, and I'm glad that that young people are stepping up to the plate and hosting this convention each year and bringing, you know, people out here to speak. And I can't wait to hear tonight's speaker and speakers, I should say, and some of the afternoon speakers we have. And I'm just really grateful to be live and sober today. That's all I got. Thanks.
Thanks, Brendan. Yeah, we're good on time.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Please welcome our third speaker, Michelle M. from Phoenix, Arizona.
Hi, Michelle. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Michelle.
I have no idea what I'm going to say. I'm just going to go for it. So first, I have a sobriety date, January 24th of 2000. So in January, I'm going to have 12 years, God willing. I have a sponsor. I have a home group. Currently, I'm taking women through the steps, and I pray every morning, and I, right now, currently am on my ninth step. So, and I say those things, and I always say those things first because those are the things that ground me in the program. You know, those are the things today that, see, I'm emotional. I have a lot going on, that ground me, you know, and that is, like, without that, I don't know if I would be sober. I don't know anything, you know, without those things. So I'm really grateful to be here, and I'm really grateful that I get to share with you guys. I was raised in a single parent home in New York. My dad left, hasn't come back yet, so not waiting around any longer. My mom's a therapist, and so I was raised in kind of like, I was awesome for her because I was this fatherless child that she got to like therapize all the time, and we were a great team. So my mom ended up getting remarried to somebody in the military, and when I was little, I always felt like there was this big hole, you know what I mean? Like something was always missing. I always had something to prove. I always had something to work for. I wasn't good enough. You know, I wasn't pretty enough. I wasn't important enough. You know, like I always had just this underlining low self-worth, you know, and today I understand that for me was, is a spiritual malady, you know. I was not connected to anything except myself, and I was self-centered as a child, and, I was arrogant, and, I did what I wanted to do, and I didn't care. It was hard. It was hard. And growing up in a single parent home, because then my mom gets remarried, and then of course, you know, it just reinforces everything. So my mom gets remarried to somebody in the military, and I'm like all over the place. Now it's awesome because I can have a geographical and it not be my choice. So like I would just damage relationships and be like, well, I'm going to leave in 2 years anyways. And so that's just kind of how it went for me. Like, I'm going to destroy stuff and then move on to the next state. Destroy stuff, move on to the next state. And still to this day, I'm like, when I've been somewhere, I think I've been living here for like almost 5 years or something. Again, this is like the second time I've lived here. I get like, I got to go. It's time to go. Where are we going? You know? And so those are really good things that I've gotten to look at throughout my recovery and going through the steps, because I see patterns, you know, I see patterns, I see red flags, and it's good for me because that challenges me to grow. Like when I want to move, it's like, okay, well, what's going on? You know, what's really going on in your life? What are you scared of? And, I learned that in AA. So we end up moving around a lot, and I end up, the first time I ever drank or used was when I was 12, and I was in heaven. Like, I was with these, like, 8th and 9th graders, and I was in 6th grade, and I felt so freaking cool, and it took all of that fear away. It took the insecurity, it took the anxiety, and because I was always an anxious kid, always, and still today I go a million miles an hour, and when I was little I was like that too, so... It removed everything for me, and I was in heaven. And after 12, I didn't do it every single day because I was 12, and I, you know, I had no idea even where they got the alcohol or, you know, how they got the weed or whatever. But I just knew that whenever anybody brought it up or mentioned it, like, I was all about it, you know, from that day forward. And so it took away everything. It took away everything. And so... Fast forward, I end up moving to Colorado, and that's when everything went downhill. You know, like, that is where, you know, I was in high school, and I'm drinking all the time, I'm using drugs all the time, I have no relationship with my mom, I have no relationship with my stepdad, and, you know, they kick me out. They're like, you have to go. You know, your life is making our life unmanageable, and you're going to have to leave. So they kicked me out when I was 16, and... I felt so awesome because, you know, I got kicked out and I was living in an apartment and, you know, and I'm sitting there like thinking I'm like the coolest one out of my friends. Like they're like, oh, we're going to spend the night at Michelle's house. And they would go to my apartment. You know, their parents never even knew. But real honestly, like I was miserable, you know, I was completely miserable and I was in an abusive relationship and, I was 16 and pretty much for me, drugs and alcohol took my childhood away, you know, like everything that I wanted to do in high school, like I was a cheerleader. That didn't happen in high school. I was, you know, popular and was a part of these clubs in elementary school. And then that didn't happen, you know, like it took away everything. And I was like 16 thinking I was the shit because I lived in this crack house with these freaking 30-year-old crack dealers and I was getting beat up by my boyfriend. And in my head, I'm like, I'm living the life. You know what I mean? Like I'm 16 and I have my own apartment and that's crazy. Like how did I get there? You know, when you're talking about the dreams, you know, I wanted, and this is really silly, I know, but I really wanted to be an astronaut and I went to space camp like 3 times when I was little. And so I really wanted to be this astronaut. And I just remember on my 18th birthday, I still wasn't living at home and my grandpa had sent me this book and it was like there on each page, there was like a planet and a star. And he wrote like a really cool quote about me or whatever. And I would just remember looking at it on my 18th birthday and being like, what the fuck? Like I am so, like, I started like going good and somehow I ended up like way over here. You know what I mean? And so after my 18th birthday, I was like, I've got to pull it together. Like, because of course me, self-will, like I have self-reliance, you know, it talks about in the big book with fear and like, did self-reliance fail us? And it's like, you know, I wasn't there yet. Like, I was terrified, you know, of what my life had become and where I was going. But it was like, oh, let's try it again. So I closed my eyes, I pointed to a map, and I drove to Arizona. And that's how I got here. And I was working. I was going to college, and I was working at Denny's Graveyard. And these people came in. Like, this is very good. These people came in every night, and they were, like, my age, and they were happy, and we would get in pie fights, and they would, like, talk to me for extended periods of time, asked me how I was doing and asked me what my favorite color was, and I didn't even know. I said blue. I don't even know. I think my favorite color today is still is blue because of that incident. And I was just so broken. You know what I mean? And real honestly, like, it wasn't about the drugs or the alcohol, you know? Like, yeah, I have a reaction to it, and when I drink, I get drunk. Like, that's it. When I get high, I can't stop, you know? And I have an allergy to it, clearly. But it was me, you know what I mean? Like, I've tried all these things over and over to get better, and nothing worked, ever. And so I'm sitting there, and these people were, like, giving me, like, really big tips and talking to me, and they were, like, looking at me in the eyes, and I just was like, what the hell? Who are these people? You know what I mean? Like, and so, you know, like, that's where I found God. You know, they were members of Alcoholics Anonymous, the young people in the program, and they took me to my first meeting. And I'm, like, so grateful for that. Like, so grateful. I was 18 and I was here, and not in Casa Grande, in Arizona. I was miserable. Like, I was miserable. And all honestly, between the last time I got drunk and my first meeting was like 6 days, you know? And I hadn't used, and I swore it off, and I knew it wasn't gonna last long, but I was like miserable. Like, miserable. And I went into treatment, and I thought my life was over, and I was convinced that nothing was ever going to get better. I was never going to have fun again. That my, you know, when I got married one day, I was going to freaking, you know, it was going to be the worst wedding ever because there was going to be no alcohol, and I was going to have this dull life. And that has not been my experience. You guys taught me how to do laundry. And this is like growing up in WIPOP for me. Like, I didn't know how to clean my house. She taught me how to cook. She was my roommate for like 8 years, you know? I still can't cook, but she does. I think she taught me how to bread chicken or something. people taught me how to, you know, I've friends in this program who didn't have a license coming in. I've taught them how to drive, you know what I mean? People taught me how to fill out job applications, how to talk to an employer, you know, like, you people taught me that. And I love, somebody told me is that, like, getting sober young is really scary because, okay, what if it is a phase? You know what I mean? All I know, like, okay, what if it was? But for me, my life significantly and drastically got better coming into AA. Like, I don't need to think about it. I don't need to analyze it. My life got 360 better. And the minute I start thinking I'm not an alcoholic or I don't need this program, my life significantly gets worse, you know? And so I don't need to trip on it. It is what it is. Like, that's my experience. And like, I've bought cars in the program. I mean, I know these are just all things, but like, you guys taught me how to do that. Like, I didn't know any of this. I graduated school. Like, I'm a teacher. People let me in their classroom to teach little kids. Like, what? Who does that? Like, I'm like shocked, you know? I've been able to get married in the program. I've been able to have a baby in the program. I've experienced a lot, and all I know for me is that, like, what has happened is amazing, you know? It is amazing. And you know what? Like, I am going through some of the, like, I would rather get sober, like, 75 times over than to go through what I'm going through right now. But I haven't drank. I don't want to drink. I don't want to use. All I want is to be close to God. And that's amazing, you know, for me, because I'm like a runner that wants to go move to another state, and I'm the self-centered girl that doesn't care about anybody else or anything else, you know. I wasn't going to speak today. I canceled, actually, 2 weeks ago, and Eddie was like, it's not an option, and like 3 days ago, and I was like, what do you mean it's not an option? It's like, it's not an option, and I'm like, okay, I will be there. And so that's what I do, you know, like, I show up, and And I'm 30 now, and, you know, life's gotten hard, but, like, I've stayed sober through it, you know, like, regardless, like, bottom line, like, my program, God, you know, steps, my sponsor, that, you know, comes first, because without that, like, I can't be a mom today. And the reason why I can show up for my daughter is because, like, you people have taught me, you know, like, because I was willing to show up to, you know, a meeting and ask for help that first time. Like, I know what happens when you do it over and over and over. And it's a beautiful, beautiful process, you know? And I've allowed, like, God just shows up. Like, whenever I've gone through anything in my recovery, the minute I start talking about it, like, an angel appears. You know what I mean? And I'm like, oh, thank you, you know? And the good thing is, like, I know I'm gonna be okay, and I'm really involved in young people. Like, I'm really involved, because the thing is like, when I came in and I thought that everything was falling apart and I was never gonna have fun, and these people at Denny's were having pie fights and they were smiling, it's like, my life isn't over. You know what I mean? Like, I've had the most amazing times in this program. And, you know, me and Brendan have been on the Icky Pot bid committee for Arizona. We're trying to get the international conference of young people in AA to come to Phoenix, you know? And we've worked on this for 6 years, 5-6 years. And I'm dedicated to that, you know? And it keeps me coming back. It keeps me showing up, because I want everybody in Arizona who can't go to St. Louis or LA or wherever it is, I want them to experience that amount of enthusiasm and love and recovery that happens throughout young people, because it exists, you know? And you know, we've started meetings in the White Mountains. They have a meeting in the White Mountains now, in Sholo, a young people's meeting. We've started meetings in you know, Yuma, and, you know, we're like these crazy people driving around the state of Arizona going, do you want to start a young people's meeting? We'll start a young people's meeting with you. But, like, those meetings and those moments are amazing, you know, because I am so far out of myself, and I just want to carry the message, not only of Alcoholics Anonymous, but I want to carry the message that life is not over, and you can have more fun in recovery than you ever did using. And that has been my experience, and that's why I feel it necessary to share that with everybody who will freaking listen. And so I share everything with everybody who will listen anyways. But you know, I chaired Valley Paw for a year. I've done Icky Paw forever. You know, I try to go to at least one young people's conference a year. It reminds me where I came from. It reminds me of my roots. And, it's amazing. It's an amazing service. In the young people arena is awesome. Like, they trust, like, I was a hotel person. Brandon, you said hotel. I was a hotel person, and I'm like, hit $60,000 contracts, $250,000 contracts. Like, people trust me. I'm like, are you kidding me? Do you know who I am? Trust me to, like, create these contracts. You know what I mean? And talk to people, like, these business people. And, you know, it's taught me how to have communication skills. It's taught me how to bite my tongue and be willing to be wrong. And, you know, there's conflicts in committees and there's conflicts in WIPA and everybody knows everybody and whatever, but it's taught me to work within a group of people and to be, you know, within a fellowship of, and have to, like, communicate and share and be honest and be humble. The beautiful part about that is, as a result of all the work that I've done in WIPA and on committees, I've been able to carry that into, like, my job. You know what I mean? And I know how to talk to people at work. And I know how to, you know, when I go to the doctor, I know how to talk to, and I know it's really silly stuff, but, like, you guys taught me that, you know? Because when I came in here, I had no clue how to do any of that. No clue. And so, if you're here and you're new, the thing that I say, I tell everybody, I'm like, just get in the middle. Just get in the middle. Just get every commitment. Go jump in the middle of the boat, you know, because it's so worth it and it's such a blessing. And I'm so grateful, because without, you know, with the relationships that I've formed as a result of being a part of all this, you know, like, I wouldn't be at where I'm at today. You know, people, we show up for each other, and it's turned into, like, a really big family. You know, like, a lot of these people and some of these people in this room are part of my family now. So I'm really blessed, and thank you for putting up with my tears, and I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Michelle.